Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into an Aberdeen investment trust. We're going to be taking a look at the Aberdeen Asian Income Fund. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by investment manager Yu Jong Oh. Yu Jong, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Hello, thank you very much.
So we're going to be looking at the investment trust strategy, we're going to be looking at the holdings, and we're going to be looking at the wider environment that it's operating in. But before we get into it, Yu Jong, please would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself, but also the investment trust, please.
Hello, my name is Yu Jong. I'm joining you from Singapore today to talk about the Aberdeen Asian Income Fund. This is an investment trust, which is about £425 million in size. It offers a 5.8% dividend yield. And we've been delivering 15 consecutive years of dividend growth. So for all those years, bar the two COVID years, these have been fully covered dividend payments. And the fund also has close to 40% dividend cover held in revenue reserves. So this Aberdeen Asian Income Fund targets the income and capital growth potential of some of Asia's most successful and promising companies, making use of the expertise of our 40-strong team of analysts located on the ground across the region. I really think that having this network of local knowledge, which includes languages, cultures, that's one of our key competitive strengths in analysing the companies in the region.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I want to drill down a little bit further into the trust now, if we may, Yu Jong, and look at the breakdown of the portfolio. I think listeners would be interested to hear some of the top holdings in there and also the investment strategy that you pursue as well, please.
Okay. So we use a quality first investment process. So we're looking at a company's business strength as well as its financial strength, alongside the management team's track record of delivering on what they've said that they will do. So one of the additional benefits of this focus on quality is that this fund is rated highly by third-party ESG ratings companies. So we have a 5-Globe Morningstar sustainability rating, and we're also rated A for ESG by MSCI. So dividends, I think, can be found across geographies and sectors in Asia. And I'd just really like to stress that the depth and breadth of quality opportunities in this income space are still very attractive today. So as bottom-up stock selectors focused on quality, we're looking for the best income ideas across the region, which has resulted in this portfolio that covers both the high-yield companies in the financials and utility space, for example, as well as dividend growth companies that will benefit from a cyclical recovery in earnings, which is one of the reasons that we have our high sector positioning in information technology. If I look on a geography basis, then our highest weightings are to Taiwan, Singapore, and Australia. And these three markets are the highest yielding markets in Asia. So that should be pretty self-explanatory as well. And our top 10 holdings collectively make up about 45% of the fund's AUM. So quite well diversified, but still a fairly concentrated portfolio that reflects our best ideas in the income space.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So preparing for this podcast, one thing that I did notice, Yu Jong, is the portfolio isn't tied to any benchmark, which is quite interesting. What's the thinking behind this?
So we use the standard MSCI Asia Pacific ex Japan Index as a sort of benchmark to help monitor the fund's performance, and really to explain to investors how the fund has done compared to the region. But as you point out, we're not tied to this index, given it's not really reflective of the income universe in Asia. So there will unsurprisingly be some key differences in terms of how we're positioned. So for example, we own less in Korea and India versus this benchmark index, as these two countries have historically not been very high dividend payers. Although perhaps going forwards, we'll see this change with India's improvement in earnings growth, as well as Korea's corporate value-up program.
Thank you. So, of course, the portfolio is managed on a bottom-up basis, but I'd just like to speak to the macro environment, if we may, Yujong, please, and how you view this at the point in time, and if at all, is this shaping your allocations at the moment?
Yep. So whilst we're bottom-up stock pickers, we, of course, can't ignore broader themes that will impact the region or companies' abilities to pay dividends. So I think the key sort of macro themes that income investors are looking at the moment are interest rates. So we see that the Fed rate cut expectations have softened even over just the first 3 months of this year. So this should help the high yielding sectors such as utilities and telecoms that we own in this fund. And then from an earnings perspective, we're expecting to see a pretty healthy recovery in the technology space from the low base that we saw in full year 2023. So we see pretty good end customer data points from the US companies, which feeds through to the semiconductor players here in Asia, where the likes of TSMC and Samsung Electronics, which are two sort of global leaders in the fields that they operate in, both sitting on net cash balance sheets, both with market leading positions in their areas of expertise. So these two companies are standing to benefit from a much better pricing environment, as well as volume growth. So I think with an earnings recovery coming through, then that will lead to better cash flows. And that will, of course, hopefully lead to better dividends and better investments into further growth opportunities, which will benefit shareholders as well. So we're really looking for the broad thematics that might impact the region here in Asia. And that's something that we overlay with our bottom-up stock picking process.
Lovely, thank you. So just want to pick up on something here that I noticed. And of course, I think when people hear the words and the region Asia, I think all of a sudden China would spring to mind for many. But it's quite interesting to look at the portfolio breakdown. And you know, there's not one Chinese stock in the top 10 holdings, for example. There is exposure to China in the portfolio. So what's the thinking behind this, Yujong? Of course, you know, if you look at, you know, the broader Asian indices, you know, China would make up a big part of that, but you know, that's just not present in this portfolio. So what's the thinking behind that? Is that a top-down decision to omit some of the biggest Chinese companies from the portfolio?
No, so we're not trying to omit China from the portfolio. And actually, as a house and as an investor, I think there is a great consumer story in China that we would ideally have exposure to in this fund as well. But every company that we invest in within the portfolio needs to pull their weight in terms of both income and capital growth. We're not running a barbell strategy to deliver on our yield expectations. So for a really long time, we didn't own any of the China internet stocks. And of course, I think, as you said, people think of Asia, they think of China, and then they think of China and they think of internet. But we've not been owning these internet stocks as they don't pay dividends. But what happened in 2023 was that not only was there a significant price correction for some of these higher quality internet names, such as Tencent, which still, you know, operates one of the leading gaming franchises globally, but they also formalized a dividend policy linked to cash flow generation. So these triggers were one of the hurdles that we were looking for to be able to initiate it into the portfolio. So having not held any internet stocks, we did buy into Tencent and Autohome as well last year. And we're also always trying to get better access to this consumer aspiration story in China. So if you think of the rising middle classes, that growing desire to protect wealth and possibly even pass down assets to the next generation. So we're looking to get access to that. But sometimes we can do it without investing directly into Chinese companies. So we'll invest in Hong Kong listed companies such as AIA, that gives us some of the savings products and insurance products that play into this theme. And this fund is also open for Stock Connect. So we can directly invest into A shares as well where appropriate. So even though our overall exposure to China is low, we also have A share stocks such as Meidi, which plays again into this consumer aspiration trend of the growing middle classes wanting to spend a little bit more money to upgrade their lifestyles.
Thank you. That's fascinating. Thank you very much, Yujong. So moving on now, and we're going to be looking at, I think, here some of the individual constituents of the portfolio, and it would be good to get some insight into what have been the best performers and of course some of the worst performers over the last year.
So one of our big positions that we took last year was that this fund was an early buyer into this technology recovery story. So if you look at our top 10 holdings, and our biggest holding is TSMC that I touched upon earlier, but not just the large cap companies, but I think this plays into that competitive strength that I mentioned earlier on, because we have the 40 strong team of analysts located on the ground covering the mid cap and small cap companies as well. And remember, small cap companies is actually one of the most interesting things for a closed end fund to look at, just given our slightly more generous liquidity profile. So this fund has about 20% of AUM invested in small cap companies with market caps below $2.5 billion. So if I carry on with this tech theme, then of course TSMC sits at the top of the food chain, but we've also been able to find very well-positioned, good quality businesses within that Taiwanese supply chain, companies such as Acton, which makes the switches for circuits that has really benefited from this AI thematic, as well as Sunon Wealth, which makes a little cooling fans that go to and bring down the temperature in big data centers and inside your PCs to try and dissipate that heat. So again, this has been another indirect beneficiary of the big AI thematic that we have seen globally since the end of last year. So I think being able to play that entire supply chain has been one of the key reasons that we've been able to deliver good performance to our shareholders over the past year. Also, this point about being underweight China, we do have a smaller weight to China relative to the benchmark. We think of Asia as being, you know, the home to some of the world's best companies. And that really is Asia as a whole, which includes all the other countries outside of China as well. So being underweight to China last year has also been positive, given China has been one of the weakest markets in the region. So that also helped our performance over the past 12, 14 months as well. I also just wanted to touch on some of the things that haven't done as well, perhaps. So even though we have this big exposure to technology, there are, of course, winners and losers within that. And I think that's one of the benefits of having a diversified portfolio. So where some of our technology companies didn't do as well, so where they weren't exposed so much to the AI thematic, then these are the companies that we've been reducing in weight. So that will be companies like AEM in Singapore, HANA in Thailand as well. They're part of our broader basket, but we have been bringing those weights down in order to put that capital to work in companies where we see better earnings growth potential.
Thank you very much. And you did allude to some extent to my next point here, Yujong, in some of those shares that you're selling down. But it'd be good to get an idea of some of the stocks you've been buying. And of course, you mentioned there some of the stocks you've been selling recently.
Yeah, that's right. So I think one of the things, again, that has been quite important over the past couple of months is valuations in the region. So, you know, I mentioned that we are underweight India relative to the broader index here in Asia, but we have had holdings in India that have done very well. So amongst our top 10 stock performers, we've got companies like Power Grid of India, which is like the National Grid, but in the Indian market. So they've done very well. They've also been investing in renewable power sources. Share prices have benefited from the good sort of Indian story there. So we're looking at a company that is delivering on dividends, it's delivering on earnings, but of course now valuations are looking very expensive. And that really applies to the whole India market. So after a very strong year, India looks pretty richly valued. So if we look across the region, then you come to ASEAN, and here you've got markets like Indonesia that has a very similar population demographic to India in terms of size, in terms of youth of the labor market. So that domestic consumption-driven growth opportunity is still very attractive for Indonesia as well. But valuations here are not as frothy as those in India. It hasn't had the big share price rally that India has enjoyed last year. So we've been putting money into the Indonesian market ahead of what we believe will be the opportunity for earnings growth here as well. So you'll see that we've initiated companies like AKR and Bank Mandiri within Indonesia to benefit from that at a more reasonable price as well. I mentioned that we've been adding selectively to China as well, where valuations have corrected, and we will continue to look for good quality ideas that meet our share price hurdles. And we'll, of course, be looking for any special dividends that come about as this tech cycle recovery could lead to better cash flows, which could obviously lead to special dividends or cash returns. So we'd be very interested to make sure that this fund benefits from that as well.
Thank you very much. So to finish off now, looking at the year ahead for your mandate, what excites you the most, Yujong?
Yes, I think it's a pretty exciting year, even just in the first 3 months. So I'm sure you're all aware, but close to half the world's population will be heading to elections this year. So we've already had Taiwan and Indonesia vote for consistency and stability of policy. And in a few weeks, we're going to see the outcome of India's elections as well. And then, of course, towards the end of the year, we'll have the US elections. So whilst this might result in a lot of policy-related noise, we're going to continue to focus on quality. So we'll continue to look for companies that have that solid business franchise that can do well, regardless of external factors. So I think leveraging off our in-house analyst knowledge, we'll be trying to buy these types of quality companies at the right price, especially where market volatility creates pricing opportunities. I also just want to mention the dividend outlook, because I think this is still attractive in Asia for the coming year as well. So dividends have contributed to over half the total returns delivered in the region over the past 20 years. And corporate balance sheets in Asia look very strong relative to developed market peers in particular. And that's really good for Asian corporates, because that means they still have choices to invest in growth or to increase their returns to shareholders. So I think growing corporate dividends is obviously very supportive to our own ability to increase dividends to our investors. And we'll continue to work on increasing dividends going forwards, something that's important to me as well as a fellow shareholder in this Aberdeen Asian Income Fund.
That's great. Thank you very much. Just a quick note to listeners, if you'd like to find out more about the Aberdeen Asian Income Fund, do check out the notes to this podcast. There'll be a link through to their website. We'll be able to access the latest information and fact sheets and such. So Yujong, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.